Hari Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navaditamastu Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay. Middle of 43. The performance of bhakti must be in accordance with scripture, otherwise it is not accepted as genuine expression of devotion. Srila Prabhupada explains in his purport. A sincere devotee must, therefore, be prepared to hear the Vedic literature like the Upanishads, Vedanta, and other literatures left by the previous authorities or Goswamis for the benefit of his progress. Without hearing such literatures, one cannot make actual progress. And without hearing and following the instructions, the show of devotional service becomes worthless and therefore a sort of disturbance in the path of devotional service. Unless, therefore, devotional service is established on the principles of Shruti, Smriti, Purana, or Pancharatric authorities, the make show of devotional service should at once be rejected. An unauthorized devotee should never be recognized as a pure devotee. By assimilation of such messages from the Vedic literatures, one can see the all-pervading localized aspect of the personality of Godhead within his own self constantly. This is called samadhi. Right. Okay, so this is based on the question, how to realize the absolute truth? So Sutta Goswami answers in verse 12, the seriously inquisitive student, well equipped with knowledge and detachment, realizes the absolute truth by rendering devotional service in terms of what he has heard from the Vedanta Shruti, right? So, in other words, he's realized because he's been performing devotional service, right? And he's well equipped with knowledge and detachment. That comes from devotional service, right? From performance. But it's mentioned that devotional service must be according to what has been heard from the Shruti and from the Smriti, right? Because otherwise, if we make it up, right? Because, you see, the important element, like nowadays, it's so much focus is on how someone feels, what's important to them, which is okay as a basis as long as what you're feeling is actually beneficial for you, the soul. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, like kids feel like doing so many things. You know, if it was up to them, they'd go, you know, they take a baseball bat and trash the living room. It would be great fun, you know? Like that, you know, isn't it? You know, especially, you know, like the porcelain and the, you know, the vases, they make a really good sound, right? It's very clear. It's not like the plastic or, you know, some cheapo stuff, you know. Really, it's got a good crack to it, you know. So the whole point is, but there's rules, because the problem is feelings, you can't guarantee they're going to be beneficial, right? So that's why if it's not according to Shastra, then the devotional expression may not actually be devotional, because devotion means it's pleasing to the Lord. Right? Because doing something just in connection with the Lord, but for yourself, then has that element of being of a consciousness where you're recognizing the Lord, but it doesn't become devotional until it's favorable to the Lord. So Shastra defines what's favorable. Does this make sense? So that's why then, if someone's not acting like that, it's a disturbance. Because what they'll do, they're very enthusiastic, they're putting out a lot of energy, there's so much emotion, so much involvement, but it's not actually what one should be doing. So it just creates disturbance. Does that make sense? So one should be willing to hear. Fortunately, is basically all the authority of all Shruti, Smriti, Purana, and Pancharatra, all those are within Prabhupada's purport. So just reading that you're fine. But the point is you should be willing to hear. But it also, you could take it, if even you're working within the context of Prabhupada's books, is that all the aspects, not just certain aspects. Like the second canto or fifth canto, sometimes devotees don't really, or 11th canto, they're not so interested because of the technicality, the Vedantic aspect, or the Upanishadic aspect. What it should be, one should be willing to hear everything, because then one actually gets a broad range, a broad understanding of what is transcendental. Does that make sense? Yeah. So in other words, it's not enough that I'm a devotee, so whatever I feel like, that's devotional. No, I'm a devotee, therefore I work according to the Shastra, and therefore my expression is that attempt, or my offering in devotion. So, okay, it says by a simulation of that message, then you can actually see the all-pervading supersoul constantly within the heart. That's called samadhi. Right? Does that make sense? So that's hearing. One actually gets situated properly. Now, by the association of the acharyas, one is able to hear about Krishna. Then that means that that takes on that aspect. Now, why do we say paramatma? Right? Here? Because the point is, until that devotion is developed, one doesn't really, the associates aren't actually the important aspect. You understand? Because you can think of the pastime, and it's nice. One is absorbed. But at the same time, as unless one appreciates what is happening between the Lord and the devotees, and that devotee's devotion, we're not actually getting that full understanding of the personality of Godhead. So then, it's basically what you call localized. Does that make sense? You're just thinking, it's basically about Krishna. He at wherever he may happen to be, but it's localized. So he's in the place of Vrindavan, rather than Vrindavan is a mood of devotion between that is exchanged between the Lord and the devotees. That's what actually makes Vrindavan. You know what I'm saying? So the devotees, they're actually in Vrindavan. Right? Because they understand the mood. Let's say the demons, they come to Vrindavan. Right? But they're only there locally. Right? So they're only dealing with, basically, with Paramatma. Everybody else is seeing Swayam Krishna. You know, Bhagavan, but they're seeing Paramatma. Why? Because it's just them. It doesn't matter them, the devotees, their interaction, what's Krishna's interests or desires. Does that make sense? So you do have Paramatma as a specific manifestation, but you do have Paramatma as a concept of how we're viewing the Lord. Does that make sense? So if you see according to Shastra, you'll always be able to see the Lord. That's the first step. And then by that association with the devotees, then you one will begin to appreciate the Lord in his pastimes with the devotees. Then it expands into. Does that make sense? So for us, we're dealing always with Bhagavan, but our realization of Bhagavan may not be on that level. You understand? May have that mixed devotion, maybe the Brahman or Paramatma, like that, or Bhagavan, that he's God. You understand? These kind of elements. So that by practice, it progresses to the one. So it's not a problem that it's at these stages. It's a problem that if you don't follow the scriptures, it won't go through those stages and get to the point of pure unalloyed devotion to Krishna in Braj. Does that make sense? Yes.
So we were talking about the demons before, and so I'm just thinking, does demon mean that you have a faulty attitude and you have come too close to Krishna? Because it's tempting to then call us demons because we're also dealing in a way with karma.
No, it's not a matter of proximity, because the point is even though they're physically very close, they're actually very, very far.
Yeah, but that was my point, actually.
It's that's not demon. Is the mentality? It's not about proximity, because the devotees are also very close to the Lord. The demoniac mentality means that you look at the world without considering the Lord, and even if you do recognize the Lord, it's only in a certain capacity. Like the demons, it's not that they can't see Krishna, but he's just the one who, you know, that powerful personality that supports the demigods. And the demigods being their enemy, then naturally he's their enemy. You know what I'm saying? Just by... Does that make sense? You know, if you're the friend of my friend, you're my friend. So, therefore, if the enemy of my friend, you're my enemy. Right? So, like that. You know? And if you're... Yeah, if you're the friend of my enemy, you're also my enemy. Like that. So, this is how it's working, that personal aspect. Yeah. So... It's not that they can't see. It's not even that they don't know he creates, maintains, and destroys. It's just an illusion that they think they're more powerful than that. So it's not a problem. See, it's like on one level, if I'm accepting I'm not powerful, then I like to bring God down to a very low level. I'm not doing so well. So it's like the man's in a wheelchair, right? You know, can't talk, can't anything, right? So now what's going to be his nat means if he's going to feel himself the supreme, then what's God's position, right? There shouldn't be one, or he's impersonal, or things like that. You understand? So now, here you have people who are working well, right? That means that they have a certain amount of piety in the way of material work, but not devotional. So, therefore, they have material facility, they have power, they have beauty, they have influence, right? Wealth. But they don't have that devotion. Now, if you're supposed to be supremely powerful... Now, and that's your consciousness. Is it a problem for you that Vishnu is the creator, maintainer, and destroyer of the worlds? Right? Because you're more powerful than that.
Yeah.
So, you know what I'm saying?
Hmm.
Does that make sense? It's just like, let's say, you're working in a really high-level society. So it's not a problem if, you know, let's say you have Academy Awards. Now, who's in the room there? Right? All the top celebrities.
Yeah.
Yeah, but when they call your name, what does that mean?
You're better than them.
You're better than them. So it's not a problem that. You know, so if the Academy Awards is all there, everyone's sitting around, they call your name, you know, you get up, you look around and, you know, get those things, and you're looking at a bunch of, you know, 3-year-olds and, you know, somebody, you know, some old guy, you know, that you're G-spot. And are you really going to feel good? You know, go up there and stand there, make a speech to all these people who just really couldn't care less and even know what you're talking about.
No.
You understand? Yeah. So, therefore, it's not even that they can't recognize that he's Vishnu and therefore the creator, maintainer, and destroyer. They just think, I'm superior to that.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's just, that's why it's more important, it's all about the connection to the Lord. It's all about the mood of that connection to the Lord. So therefore, if we don't accept Shastra, will we accept the devotees? You know what I'm saying? What Mother Jashoda does, what Radharani does, they're doing what pleases Krishna. What pleases Krishna is what's written in the Shastra. So if you can't follow that, why would you follow them? You understand? The two go together. If you can follow Shastra, you can follow what the Brajavasis do. If you can't follow Shastra, you won't be able to follow what they do. You know what I'm saying? It's not a matter of sentiment. It's a science. Right? So, when you have science, and then you know it very well, and you practice at it very well, that's when it becomes spontaneous. But if it's just a matter of spontaneity, and there's no basis... then it's not actually spontaneous. It's, you know, like we said, whimsical, sporadic. You know, there's all kinds of other terms for this.
Adjectives.
Yeah, like there's so many. You understand? But spontaneous is specific. It means within the nature of the science, you are inspired. Right? Rupa Goswami says that enthusiasm is endeavor with intelligence. Because otherwise, how do you get a nice result for Krishna? You know what I'm saying? It's just like someone knows that, let's say you have a top cook, and they're inspired in the preparation, but what are they basing that cooking process on?
A solid science.
They're not just, you know, hey, that looks like a nice pot, throw that into the preparation, or, you know, like that.
Yeah.
No, hey, I like those shoes. Can I have those? You know, throw it. It's like, it's not like that. Does this make sense? You know, so it has, yes.
There's basically a difference is between accepting descending and ascending processes.
Yes, yeah, you could say that. Because descending, it comes down. So when you're spontaneous in that, because you can be spontaneous in ascending, but then the problem is at some point it runs out. You know, at some point, everybody meets their defeat. Because, you know, how high can you go? Because it's based on the foundation, how well you made that foundation, how well you understand it and get up. Well, it's descending. Descending means it's already up. Yeah. So up you can go unlimited. It's just, you know, it doesn't go down so far. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Okay. The highest goal of life is to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For this reason, an intelligent person should always hear about, glorify, remember, and worship the Supreme Lord with single-minded attention. 13:14. In his purport to 1.2.13, Srila Prabhupada highlights an important principle. Especially in modern society, all activities are more or less dependent on hearing and glorifying. Any man from any social status becomes a well-known man in human society within a very short time, if he is simply glorified truly or falsely in the daily newspapers. But such propaganda by false glorification of an unqualified person cannot bring about any good, either for the particular man or for the society. The actual object of glorification is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has created everything manifested before us. The tendency to glorify others or hear others must be turned to the real object of glorification, the Supreme Being, and that will bring happiness. Because otherwise, you're dealing with the glorification process being meant for the Lord. So if you're dealing with someone who's only manifesting very minimal qualities, you know, that are coming from the Lord, then it's going to be out of balance. But someone is qualified, then they're manifesting a full amount, or a greater amount, then they can actually do some greatness for the society. Does that make sense? Yeah. The result of redirecting our natural tendency to hear and chant from material topics to Krishna Katha is described in the next verse. Quote, by taking up the sword of constant remembrance of the Lord, Sri Krishna, the devotees cut through the tight knot of bondage. What sane man will avoid the submissive and oral reception of Krishna Katha? Verse 15. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to 1.2.15, therefore, any sensible man who is above the average man with a poor fund of knowledge, right? So here, sensible is what makes them above. Because here, average man with a poor fund of knowledge, average doesn't mean that average meaning just, you know, just some simple guy over in the corner. It can also be somebody who's very well-to-do or powerful. But it's their ordinary because it's dealing with the material world. Right? Even your expert in the material world, you're the best. It's still ordinary because material world is ordinary. Spiritual is special. Does that make sense? So the difference is that they're sensible, right? So amongst the common, that means your people of the world, those who are sensible are already better than those who are not, right? Yeah. Okay. Therefore, any sensible man who is above the average man with a poor fund of knowledge must constantly remember the personality of Godhead by hearing about him, by glorifying him, by remembering him, and by worshiping him always, right? From the Gita. Without cessation, right? So it's not that sometimes you do, sometimes not, because if you sometimes are involved and interactive and sometimes not, you won't consider that a stable relationship. So how does it develop? Right? You have you develop a relationship with someone who is stable. Or even if they're not stable in the beginning, but you see the potential to develop stability. Does that make sense?
So when that's not there, that's what you work on.
Yes, because that's the point in the practice of devotional service. In Bhajana Kriya, the beginning stage is anishta, it's not stable. And then when it matures, it's called nishta. So when it matures, that's when it's called advanced. Right? So advancement is considered when your devotion is stable. Does that make sense? That's the point. But the thing is the one gets to the other as long as you follow the process. Just like if you're riding, you know, in a vehicle from here to Calcutta and you look out the window and there's Ranagat there or something. You don't get worried. right? You don't get worried if the car stops, okay? Yeah, then, if it keeps driving, you don't get worried. But you say it's only Ranagat, but no, but it's still moving. It was Krishna Nagar.
Yeah.
Right now it's Ranagat. You keep going, it'll get closer. Right? I'm not sure how great of an example, because getting to Calcutta as a goal may not be... Yeah, yeah. You know, or let's say, yeah, no, if you're driving in the car and you're on the way to the city dump,
yeah,
right? But you still see normal buildings in that, not garbage. Don't worry, you know, if you keep in the car, you'll get there, right? That would be more kind of a
type.
Yeah, kind of Calcutta, okay. Does that make sense? Okay. The actual object of glorification is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has created everything manifest before Him. Right? So, whatever you see in someone, if you see someone has good qualities, those are coming from the Lord. Right?
Yeah.
So, it's still about the Lord. Yes?
What about Mayavadis or demons that show a little bit of good qualities that also...
But they're coming from the Lord. Where else do you get it from? It's just like, let's say, the nice guy, he goes down to the store and buys potatoes. And the bad guy goes down to the store and buys potatoes. Where'd they get the potatoes from? The same place. Yeah. See, it's what someone does with what they have. Just like, let's say, someone is nice. But a bad person uses their niceness for their own advantage. You understand? Or let's say you have someone who's training someone, and so that they have a rough side. But we see is that by that dealing with that rough side, if it's used for a good purpose, that person comes out good. Let's say like a drill sergeant, you know, in the armed forces, right? They deal roughly, but you see at the end of the day, after some training, then that, you know, spaced out boy becomes a man. You understand?
Yes.
There may be other ways to go about it, but the point is that it's not what you have, it's how you use it. You know, we take it, if good qualities are automatically good, bad qualities are automatically bad, so the confusion comes. He's a bad person, but, you know, I think it was, the comment about, I don't know what it was, Pretty Boy Floyd or... Babyface Nelson, I don't know, one of those big Chicago gangsters. But one point come up, but he's really nice to his mother. He was really, really kind and took care and did everything. So now is he actually bad? You know what I'm saying? Or you have somebody who's nice, but if they find one fault, then he can't be good. You understand? So this is lack of maturity. The point is good should be seen for the good, bad for the bad. So how do you define someone as bad? The majority is bad. How do you define someone as good? Majority is good. You know, because otherwise if they say, no, he's got a little bad, he can't be good, then that means where will you find the good person? Where is that good person? You understand? So that's the whole point is, that's why Shastra is important, because it's not just our feelings and our take on things. It's a matter of, if everything's come from God, then why is the demon so powerful? Right? Hiranyakashipu, he became so powerful. He was just sitting in his living room and, you know, one day, you know, he turned on the television and, certain, you know, gamma rays came out and he became so powerful. Right? You know, he's been trying to find that channel ever since, right? Is it? No, he went out and did austerities, right? He stood on his tippy toes with his hands out in the air, up in the air for a long time. So, in other words, how can you do that unless you have focus, unless you have determination? And where do you get those guys? In other words, you've had to have done something good to build it up. But what is he using it for? Wealth is a result of pious activities. Power is a result of pious activities. Position is a result of pious activities. But the demons use it wrongly, you know, against self-realization. While the devotees use it for self-realization. That's the difference. You understand? Because otherwise, we'll just go on the regular morality. What we see externally are the situation. and purely make a decision based on that. But there's much more at stake. You know what I'm saying? So the whole thing is the tendency to glorify others, to adhere others, must be turned to the real object of glorification, the Supreme Being. And that will bring happiness, right? Because the whole thing means it depending on where it is, but you could probably say, I mean, I can only call England, I'm sure other places have it, but they have these things called, they call them the tabloids. They're just real kind of, I don't know what you'd call them, but it's just real, like, gossip. It's, you know, it's just, and then they turn that into a newspaper. You know, it's always from that angle of gossip. You know, it's not like the, Wall Street Journal or something. You know, it's just gossip. So they love to hear about others. So that tendency is not a problem. The tendency is that it's misapplied. They're hearing about gossip rather than hearing about the Lord. And so from the gossip, then it's not, it doesn't get it, no one gets any real benefit. Not the person being glorified or the person being spoken bad about, the people who hear about it, nobody gets benefit. It's just something to talk about for today. Just life's less boring. But the Lord, He has all those qualities and beyond. He's the source of them. So if you talk about Him, but the thing about Him is He's ever fresh. So you hear about it the next day, you still, you know, if I bring out the same tabloid tomorrow, no one wants to look at it. Yeah? Does that make sense? Yeah. The result of redirecting our natural tendency to hear and chant from material topics to Krishna Katha is described in the next verse. Quote, by taking up the sword of constant remembrance of the Lord, Sri Krishna, the devotees cut through the tight knot of bondage. What sane man will avoid submissive oral reception of Krishna Katha? Oh, we just read that.
Yes.
Oh, I see what I did. I kept going back to the paragraph before. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's what I did. Mm-hmm. I went from there and went back to the top. Okay. This is the perfect way of devotional service, means to always be hearing and remembering the Lord constantly. That is the perfect way of devotional service. The Goswamis of Vrindavan, who were authorized by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to preach the cult, the bhakti cult, rigidly followed this rule and made immense literatures of transcendental science for our benefit. So here, for rigidly following rules, this is the thing that why, basically, of all devotional processes, right, means within the material world, then you have those things that are worried about some good qualities or relationships or interaction, but not necessarily about the Lord. Of those who do worry a bit about the Lord, it's about what the Lord can do for us. Right? And then of those who actually worry about pleasing the Lord, right, the Vaishnavas who follow Vedanta, then it's generally their processes are very kind of simple and straightforward. They can explain it to very, very technical levels, but it's fairly straightforward. Now, the difficulty comes up is with the Gaudiyas, right? Because the Gaudiyas, here you're talking about strictly following the rules as given by Shastra. At the same time, we're talking about spontaneous devotional service. Right? So then, is it one or is it the other? No, it's both. Because we're used to one or the other. Any association that we've been in before, it's one or the other. Right? You know, the guys there in the suits, they do everything properly and all that, or the guys that don't care and completely are crazy and, you know, stand up on the table and start singing and stuff like that. It's one or the other. But it's not coming from both, that the one develops into the other. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That's the whole point. Means because otherwise, why? The one, he feels like it, so he stands up, you know, or they're on the boat, he jumps off the boat, you know, does all these, you know, nutty things. But how long can he keep that up? He's feeling good, he's feeling inspired, there's someone else to interact with, he can do that. But if it's not like that, he won't be able to do it. Right? Now, the guy in the suit, now, is he there every day at the same time? Is he drinking that coffee at the same time, eating that donut, the same donut? Is he sitting in exactly the same chair? Now that's constant, right? A bit mundane, yeah, but it's constant. Now if that is being done, that same facility is not done, in, he develops that spontaneity, will he be able to constantly be spontaneous? You understand? In other words, the one is just, I feel like, and now it pops up and then it disappears. Where did it come from? What's it based on? The other one is that it has a consistency, and then when that consistency becomes spontaneous. You know what I'm saying? You know, let's say, okay, that doesn't work as well. Let's say we take a lawyer. Right? Or was that a bad choice?
I think it's an excellent choice.
This comic book was called Dead Lawyers and Other Such Pleasant Thoughts. It was all, you know, like political cartoons, like lawyers. So you have a lawyer. Now, what to study law, you have to study all these books of all precedents of the past. I mean, volumes and volumes. I mean, you're talking about thousands of books. So now, you know, you have lawyers, you know, your general standard lawyer, he knows the thing, he goes in, he stands up, he sits down, he presents his papers, he does all the right things, and everything's nice. And, you know, he gets paid and everything goes on, right? But now, who stands out amongst the lawyers? The one who is able to spontaneously understand how to apply that logic, how to use all the other things, those are your outstanding lawyers. And he's like that. He's always like that. Because it's based on this foundation of having studied these thousands of books, seeing the patterns, seeing the formulas, all that, and then being comfortable with that, that he can think like that. The other lawyer just knows how to just do those basic things. But that means the spontaneous, he can work within that. Right? Or you have the doctor. He's a regular doctor. He does the thing. He sees it. He does what like that. Then there's a doctor who's understand the whole science becomes spontaneous. He develops things. He makes things happen. He works out ways to deal with patients or something that others don't do. You understand?
Yes.
So it's like that in anything. You know? Everybody's out there running, but somebody got something. He's worked out something more. Then he's the one that runs the race. You understand? So this element of spontaneous based on science, it's actually what is making anything successful in the world today. Does that make sense? And then because it's involving the element of emotion, then we think it can't be based on science. You can't have emotion and science, they don't go together. No, but emotion, science is just the situation. Emotion is what you're doing with the situation. Mm. You understand? But most people think if I'm going to be emotional, then I don't need a situation. Mm-hmm. Right? It's just natural. But the point is, how do you express something if there's not an environment to express it?
Right.
Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes? No?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So the Goswamis of Vrindavan, who were authorized by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to preach the bhakti cult, rigidly followed this rule and made immense literatures of transcendental science for our benefit. They have chalked out ways for all classes of men in terms of the different castes and orders of life in pursuance of the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam and similar other authoritative literatures. So they've already chalked it out. We don't have to chalk it out. We have to understand what they chalked out. If you think, oh no, they only wrote for a certain class of people in India, that means you don't understand what the Goswamis wrote. Mm. Right? The Goswamis, their writing is to accommodate everybody. Mm. Right? Because basically, in the world, people are either unmarried, or married, or, you know, kind of retired from marriage, or been there, done that. Okay? Or they are, you know, they work for somebody, you know, in some capacity, or they're the entrepreneur, right? Or they're administration, or they're, you know, the teachers and doctors and lawyers, the intellectuals, right? Do we miss somebody? So now if they've written for those eight groups and whatever combination, they've written for everybody. So this idea is that, no, it only applies here. You know, you got to speak to the Westerner. Well, okay, that's nice. But now what about speaking to the Middle Easterner? You know, what about speaking to the East Bloc? Because they're not West, and they're not East. You're in the West, East Bloc, they'll talk about Europe, you know, Germany, France, and all, as West. They don't talk about that. Yeah, we're part. No, it's West, because culturally it's different, right? You know, and then you know, like Turkey and those. That's East. You understand? So the whole point is then you have to create something new, but that's not actually what creates. That's just a matter of particular mood or flavor. You understand? But that's everybody's an individual. Okay. Only an unfortunate person. Where is this footnote? Okay. Only an unfortunate person will not pay attention to the Lord's message. In Sri Ishopanishad, Mantra 3, such a person is called Atmaha, a killer of the soul. In Shikshastika, Lord Chaitanya defines misfortune as lack of taste for hearing and chanting the Lord's holy name. That's unfortunate. So it's not a material situation that makes you fortunate or unfortunate. It's whether you have a taste in hearing the holy name. Like that. Jai Ho Maharaj. Jai Ta. How are you? Jai Ho. Jai Ta. How are you doing? Okay.
Outdooring the universe with the Sankhya person.
I see, okay. We were just discussing the other day, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was doing that. He was out tending japa in the universe, and he happened to be walking by somewhere in the outer space, and you know, there was a discussion between Shiva, Narada, the Kumaras, and all that, and they couldn't quite work something out. And while they're discussing that, I think it was Shiva said, "Oh, there's a Vaishnava, we can ask him." Like that. So I'm touring the universe. Yeah. Please have a seat. You can sit anywhere you like. So here's something. Okay. So that's how you define if it's fortunate or not, because sometimes, like, there's questions that were coming up in Bhagavatam class, that you have a devotee, he is performing devotional service, right? And then material situations don't go so well for him. Why is that? Because he's performing devotional service, right? Because we're taking it, religion is a matter of economics. I do good work, I'm going to get good work back. Right? But you're working within the material world. And so the point is you're getting benefit. You know, it's just like, let's say there's the prisoner, and he follows the rules, right? It's not that he gets necessarily a better facility. He gets out sooner. You understand? He may not be in the roughest part of the prison, but it's still in the prison. It's not because he's a good prisoner, then, you know, they let him out and he walks around or something. He's there, but he gets out sooner. Right? Because he gets the favor of those who are running the prison. You understand? So here, fortune and unfortunate is actually by whether you have a taste for hearing and chanting. It's not whether you have good material facility or not. Right? Now, if on top of not having a taste for hearing and chanting, so you're unfortunate, you also don't have material facility, then that's really unfortunate. You know, it just gets worse. Right? You know, like that. So in the footnote 14, in Harinam Chintamani, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur elaborates, the symptoms of misfortune are described in the Srimad Bhagavatam 397 as follows. O my Lord, persons who are bereft of the all auspicious performance of chanting and hearing about your transcendental activities are certainly unfortunate and are also bereft of good sense. They engage in inauspicious activities, enjoying sense gratification for a very little while, being distressed because of their inability to get even a bit of happiness from sense gratification, and overwhelmed by greed, they engage in inauspicious activities. Such people make no effort to engage in chanting and hearing your glories. In the Amnaya Sutra, four types of unfortunate misfortune or anartas are described. Hridaya Darbalya, weakness of the heart, aparad, all kinds of offenses, asatrishna, material desires, and tattva vibhrama, illusion about spiritual knowledge. These anartas lead to material bondage, which leads to misery. illusion about spiritual knowledge is of four types. It means each of these things have four types, right? So he ends up with 16. Right? Yeah. Okay. Sattva, tattva, brahma. Illusion about one's own identity. Okay, well, here are just these classes. Hrida dabalya, weakness of heart, means that weakness that I want to be the enjoyer, control and enjoyer. In other words, this purusha bhav, that's weakness of heart. Right? Then, that weakness of heart has specific, therefore, application. So that's atsatrishna, material desire. Does that make sense? Because if you don't have the desire to control and enjoy, then you won't find that there's anything to try to enjoy. Right? So, we have that desire, so therefore one is in the material world. Then there's the specifics of it. You like that? You know, somebody wants to enjoy skiing, someone else would rather enjoy sitting at home playing a video game. You know what I'm saying? So, that's the specific. That they want to enjoy, that's weakness of heart. What they want to enjoy, that's the satrishna, the material desire. Yes.
So it's like ahankara and upadis?
Yeah. Like that. Means they're non-different, but the point is you work on, it means that's why of the two, the hridaya daubalya, that I'm servant of Krishna, I'm not the controller and enjoyer, is the most important. Mm. But at the same time, as you control those material desires that are coming up, that are the satrishna. So you work from both sides. Mm-hmm. Right? Like that. Mitake. Okay, spiritual illusion is four types. Sattva Brahma, illusion about one's own identity. Paratva Brahma, illusion about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sadhya Sadhana Brahma, illusion about the process of sadhana and prema bhakti. And Virohi Vishaya Brahma, illusion regarding subjects and favorable to Krishna consciousness. Are the four types of illusion found in conditioned souls, right? So you don't know about God properly, you don't know about yourself, and you don't know about the process, right? Because that's basically what we're dealing with. The Lord and His energies, the living entity, that relationship between the living entity and the Lord, and then the process and goal of devotional service. So that's the, you know, in other words, the whole elements of the Dasamuna. But at the same time, they don't, illusion regarding subjects unfavorable. That's why Shastra. Right? You don't understand Shastra. Because otherwise, it's just like this. We'll take it that morality is important in Krishna consciousness. It's useful in Krishna consciousness, but it's not useful on its own. You know what I'm saying? Just like the knife is very useful in the kitchen for cutting the potatoes to cook for Krishna. But if you're not cutting potatoes to cook for Krishna, what's the use of the knife? You know what I'm saying? It just sits there. It does nothing. Right? The car is useful because it's used in Krishna service. But we're taking, the car is useful on its own. No, it's not. It's only useful because it can be used in the Lord's service. So that's what it means here, is an illusion about regarding subjects unfavorable. You don't understand. That which can be engaged in the Lord's service, that's when it's favorable. But without engaging the Lord's service, nothing is favorable. Does that make sense? So we'll take it that, this devotee did this, so that's immoral, he can't be a devotee. But how do you make those connections? You know, does the Shastra say that? That's the whole point. It doesn't make that kind of connection. So that's where it says you have to work on Shastra. Right? Means it's unfavorable for devotional service. In other words, that situation of being immoral is going to have problems with devotional service, because immorality generally means there's some variety of unrestrained sense gratification. Right? Means it's just selfishness, it's sense gratification. Right? Means when you're talking about selfishness, there is no morality. Right? Morality means you're going to share sense gratification. Right? In the society. So therefore, since it's being shared, then I have to be careful to only take a certain amount because others also have to take. Right? I want money, I work. Right? I make an endeavor. But I don't make an endeavor that will bother someone else's endeavor. That's morality. It's an economic thing, morality. Right? It's taken as somehow that it's spiritual. It's purely economic. Right? So, therefore, that concept used in Krishna's service becomes perfect. But not used in Krishna's service, then it doesn't, if it works so well, where is that society that's so wonderful and moral and great? I mean, Plato talked about it. You know, have we seen it? No. You know, everybody talks about it, but we don't see it. Why? Because these are only worthwhile when they're connected to the Lord. But if we look into the Vedic culture, you see it. You see the culture. Does that make sense? So, the inability to distinguish what's useful and what's not. You know, just like, oh, we don't worry about that. Cleanliness is fanatic. But cleanliness is useful in Krishna consciousness. Right? You're driving in your car, you're going from one place to another, you stop at the petrol station, you go and use the bathroom. Now, you can't wash your feet and everything, you know, like that. You can wash your hands, wash your mouth, but you can't wash your feet. So you don't worry about it then. But then when you get home and you say, oh, well, we didn't wash there, why should we wash here? Then that you can't tell the difference. You can't discriminate. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole point, is you have to actually know. And that comes from scriptures, all these. Okay. Material desires are four types. Desire for material objects, desire for heavenly comforts, desire for mystic powers, and desire for liberation are the four types of material. Right? So immediate, a future, you know, then mystic powers for the yogi. So in other words, the karmi, the jnani, the yogi. Right? All the materialists. Mm-hmm. Offenses are of four types. Towards the name, four times. Offenses towards the name, offenses towards the form of the Lord, offenses towards the devotees, and offenses towards other living entities are the four kinds of offenses. Right. So, in other words, you have those. How do you say? So it's not just we're used to the name, you know, the form of the Lord means, in other words, smartas, they don't care for the form of the Lord, right? Mayavadis don't care for the form of the Lord. For them, they accept the form that's given by Shastra, but they only meditate upon that form because it's easier than meditating on nothing, right? Like in India, much of the Hindus, they have an altar, they like to meditate and all that because it's easier, you can focus. Right? And you're not going to find anything better. Everyone will consider that form of the Lord is the best, in their concept, the best manifestation of the mode of goodness. So mode of goodness is as good as it gets in the material world, so you're not going to get it any better in meditation than meditation on Vishnu. Right? So therefore, even Mayavada, everybody will agree. Right? But the problem is, as they say, the form's not eternal. So it's only something you make in the mind or, you know, like that, for the purpose of meditating. Hmm. So that's an offense to the form.
Seems interesting. They accept the scripture and then they don't.
They accept, but their interpretation was wrong. So that's why it said it's not complete. So, in other words, everybody's philosophy, there's something useful about it, but it's always incomplete. You understand? Only when it's come authorized, coming down, then you get the complete understanding. Otherwise, let's say, you know, the people are talking about, yes, you know, power to the people, and they said, yes, the people should feel comfortable in their life and power that they can do things and go about their life and all that. They should. But the point is what does that mean? You have to have a certain kind of governance. Mm. Does that make sense? If you have the wrong governance, you won't get that. Right? But it's not that the people go and take it. Take it from where? Because if they go out and just take the power, but then, okay, if you're in the power, now you have to make sure everybody else is getting. But are they going to do that? No. So it's wrong. Okay. And then the last one. Weakness of the heart is of four kinds. Attachment to objects not related to Krishna. Deceitfulness or fault-finding. Enviousness and desire for fame.
Mm. Right? Seems they're overlapping. I mean,
well, what happens, it seems that there's different ways you can categorize.
Yes,
so one will be fault finding, like that, and offenses. So it's basically point is these are all the problems. Yeah. However you want to put them together, exactly. You know, that's the bottom line. We're don't say, well, this looks different from that, so I'll throw the whole thing out. No, you just take the whole thing, categorize it like that. Yeah. Okay. But the point is, attachment to objects not related to Krishna, that's how the weakness of heart comes up. Mm-hmm. Right? Then there'll be, because of that, there'll be deceitfulness, fault-finding, enviousness, desire for fame. So it just gets worse. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's all. But it comes from this attachment to objects not related to Krishna, because material means you don't see it connected to Krishna. Mm-hmm. So, how can one develop the taste for hearing and chanting the holy name and thus transform himself from unfortunate to fortunate person? The answer is given in verses 16 to 21. So verses 16 to 21, summary of the process of bhakti. In this important section, Suta Goswami describes a gradual progress of the consciousness of a devotee who overcomes the effects of the modes of nature and attains pure devotional service through the proper hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam and serving pure devotees. Okay. So here, gradual process, right? So then you overcome. It means if you can do it quicker, great. But if not, then gradual is better than nothing. You understand? So the idea is stable. So in other words, if you can do it immediately, meant you had to be very stable for that nanosecond. And it worked. Right? If not, then you would be a stable, you know, stable however long it takes. If it takes a lifetime, but you try to be stable in that. Because that's what will make the progress. Srila Jiva Goswami writes in his Bhakti Sandarbha, Anucheda 11, "It is not so that the unfortunate mass of people will not be attracted to hear the Lord's message. Oh, is it not so that the unfortunate mass of people will not be attracted to hear the Lord's message? Fearing that someone would raise this objection, in the next five verses, 1, 2, 16 to 20, the speaker of Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam, says that devotional service, even up in its highest state of unalloyed devotion, is easy to perform. Because otherwise people are going to get worried if the process is complicated. The process is very simple. Right? But we have very sophisticated explanations of every aspect of that simple process. Right? By rendering service under the pure devotees, one gains an affinity for hearing about Krishna. Why? Because they're always hearing about Krishna. Why does it say pure devotees? Because pure devotees are always hearing and chanting. So if you associate with them, you develop the desire for hearing and chanting. Right. Anyone you associate with, you will develop the similar desires. Right?
Yeah.
Verse 16. Okay. One can find an excuse not to surrender by saying he does not have taste for spiritual topics. But nobody can say that he doesn't like to serve because service is the soul's inherent nature. Right? Everybody wants to serve. Even if it's serving themselves, you still have to serve. Right? There's no question you can't. And even Krishna makes that point. You can't even be happy not serving the self as a minimum. Right? You do have to get up, feed yourself, go to the toilet, you know, take a bath. You have to do that. You have to engage in activity. It has to happen. By redirecting our natural tendency to render service from serving our mind and senses to service to the great devotees, we attain spiritual taste. So we don't have it. Service is the answer. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport, "The servants of God come to propagate God consciousness, and intelligent people should cooperate with them in every respect. By serving the servant of God, one can please God more than by directly serving the Lord." Right? Because the only one that can directly serve the Lord, actually, there's only, Rupa Goswami mentions, only Radharani is directly serving the Lord. Everybody else in Vrindavan is serving the Lord in the capacity for arrangements for Radha and Krishna. Because she being the Srup Shakti, the complete Shakti, she is actually the direct because she's non-different. Right? Every aspect of Krishna as the Shaktiman, she is the Shakti. So they're non-different. So she can serve every aspect. Everybody else being her expansion, they're a portion. So they can serve that aspect. But if they directly serve, then you're only getting that much aspect. So you bring in this much aspect with unlimited. How's that going to work? But you serve the unlimited potency. Then your service is perfect. So therefore, you always have to serve the servant of the Lord. That's the principle. Therefore, surrender to Guru. Surrender to Vaishnavas. Right? It's the same process. The Lord is more pleased when he sees that his servants are properly respected, because such servants risk everything for the service of the Lord, and so are very dear to the Lord. Right? So this even takes it to a further step, not just the tattva on what's the relationship, but because these devotees do surrender to the Lord, give everything to the Lord. They're very dear to the Lord. So serving them makes the Lord more happy than serving him. Right? So it even takes it to the further position of personal rather than just position. Right? The Lord declares in the Bhagavad Gita 18:69 that no one is dearer to him than one who risks everything to preach his glory. By serving the servants of the Lord, one gradually gets the quality of such servants, and thus one becomes qualified to hear the glories of the Lord. The eagerness to hear about God is the first qualification of a devotee eligible for entering the kingdom of God. He wants to hear, because that's all they talk about in the spiritual world. So if you don't want to hear, you don't want to go to the spiritual world, because that's all they talk about.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Okay, so then...
this term, going back to God, while living in the Dham, but we speak about his offenses, how the weakness in the heart that... I was discussing yesterday with some devotee, what were the people like, living in the Dham, like Muslim, they killing the cows, so they also go back to Godhead?
Because no, it's not necessarily means you have to give all that up first.
Right.
You know, the point is it means why are there dogs in the Dham?
Right.
You know, because people in the Dham do things they shouldn't be doing.
Right. Yes. So first they have to accept that this body.
It's not a matter of that. It's a matter of you go back to Godhead when you're performing pure devotional service.
Right.
Or at least you're aspiring for that.
Yes.
You know, and remember Krishna.
Yes. And in the case of a devotee family, because it is mentioned that devotee go back to Godhead and the generations also going back to Godhead as well. So how it is connected with our devotional service? Or
because they're connected to him, so they get that benefit. But it's just a matter of when they go. That's
yes,
another thing.
Yes.
It says they're liberated. It doesn't say they go back to Godhead.
Ah, okay. I see.
That means they get that opportunity. Because if you're liberated, generally you're in a more pure state, so there's more of a tendency to take up spiritual life. The essence is you have interest in hearing and chanting, you get the benefit. You don't, you don't.
Right.
You know, there's no tricks, there's no loopholes, there's no things. All these are discussions over situations. They're not actually getting down to actually what devotional service is, because devotional service is abhideya.
Right.
But generally, all the discussions are sambandha.
Right.
You know, they think it's because I have sambandha, therefore I go back to Godhead. No, it's because you apply sambandha into your devotional life. That's why you go back to Godhead.
So that's why what Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying, whoever died here and the Dhamma is going back to Godhead, but it's not a question of when.
Yeah, there's no question of when.
Yeah.
But there's also the element is that there's more working there. Now, is that person, there is some element. So even if everybody goes, still where you are within the pastimes in relation to your commitment, that will be different.
Right.
Someone is advanced in devotional service, then he's advanced in the spiritual world in devotional service. And if he wasn't very advanced here, even if he gets into the spiritual world, he won't be very advanced then. So he'll have to develop.
Right.
But the point is there's good association there, so it's not a problem. You know? But the point is what's the point of discussing these things? Either I'm working hard at devotional service, these guys are not, and if they're going to get the same benefit as me, then you know, something's wrong.
Right.
Or, why should I work so hard? So these are not real discussions.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Top of 46. Srila Jiva Goswami comments on the same verse as follows. This verse also means that by seeing, touching, conversing with, and in other ways serving the great souls who travel to or permanently reside in the holy places of pilgrimage, one develops faith in the great souls. One then thinks, why do they talk amongst themselves about the topics of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? I should also hear about those topics. In this way, the desire to hear about the Lord is born, and by hearing about him, one becomes attracted to him. By hearing in this way from the great souls, one at once attains the real goal of life. This is described by Lord Kapiladeva. In the association with faith and respect of pure devotees, discussion of the pastimes and activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is very pleasing and satisfying to the ear and heart. By cultivating such knowledge, one gradually becomes advanced on the path of liberation, and therefore he is freed, and his attraction becomes fixed. then real devotion and devotional service begin. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:25-25. Mm-hmm. Right? So here's that one's interacting, it says, with faith and respect. Well, one is by doing when it develops that faith. Right? In other words, there has to be some faith in the beginning. Right? So by having that faith in the beginning, then by associating, you know, with respect, one develops more faith that one wants to hear. They're hearing, so why shouldn't I hear? Right? That's good. I have faith in them. They hear, so I should also hear. And then by hearing, then that develops, that one attains, you know, pure level of position.
Yes. By cultivation of such knowledge, it means that the study and the association of devotees?
Cultivating such knowledge. Where is that? By cultivating such knowledge, yeah. Yeah, it says discussion of the pastimes and activities of the Supreme Lord. By cultivating such knowledge, one gradually becomes advanced. Right? Because Krishna says, like in the Gita, when he gives, defines knowledge, we see it's not just academic.
Right.
You know, humility, how you associate, how you interact with others, that whole thing. So, so in other words, the culture of knowledge means that whole behavior. That's why technically the present concept of academics in the world is an actual cultivation of knowledge, because you're not cultivating the character. They may have facts and figures, but they're not cultivating the knowledge that goes along with that.
Yes.
You know, the lifestyle that goes with it. So it's not real knowledge. So that's why they can be very, very, let's say, academically astute, but character-wise be very weak.
Yes.
They should go together. Because what's the use of a very intelligent person who doesn't have character?
Yes.
You know, you're always going to come up with something that you wish hadn't happened. You know what I'm saying? You know, like the guillotine or something. The rack. You know, these are all examples of more intelligence than character. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, the atom bomb. You know, I mean, so these are all just where intelligence is so great, but character is not. Does that make sense? In other words, if administration means to protect the people, right, then protecting the people means it should be a place in which they can function, they can live. Right? Now, if you drop an atomic bomb on some place, you may win the war. But now, who can use the place? You know, what's the quality of life? So how is that protecting the people? So in other words, you want to win the war, great, but win the war so you can still protect the people when you finish. So atomic warfare doesn't have any value where they have enough intelligence to figure out the atomic explosion, but they don't know how to control it. They only know how it just, you know, you put this much together, you get this big, you put this much bigger, you get that big. But previously they had the mantras, they could control it. So you can use it, but, you know, you want to get rid of one thing, you get rid of just that one thing. Mm-hmm. You know, so you don't like the local movie theater because it's showing all kinds of, you know, unsavory films. Mm-hmm. You get rid of only that. You don't disturb the nice little, you know, vegetable shop next door. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So the point is they don't know how to control it. So, therefore, it's unusable. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, you know, okay, we get out these mutant piranhas or something, and it goes over, and because this other place has water all around, we defeat the enemy. But now no one can use the water there, because anytime anyone gets close, then these mutant piranhas come along and eat them. So how have you actually solved the problem of making a safe place for the people? That's the point. That's where I was saying. Intelligence is beyond character. Right? Srimad Bhagavatam 10:87-35 further describes the exalted qualities of the devotees and the benefits of serving them. Sages free from pride live on this earth by frequenting the sacred pilgrimage sites and those places where the Supreme Lord displayed his pastimes. Because such devotees keep your lotus feet within their hearts, the water that washes their feet destroys all sins. Anyone who even once turns his mind towards you, the ever-blissful soul of all existence, no longer dedicates himself to serving family life at home, which simply robs a man of his good qualities. Right? Because, in other words, a grihastha is not serving family life. That's a grihamedi. Grihamedis serve family life. Grihastas engage family life in the service of the Lord. There's a difference. The activities may be exactly the same, but what's the goal of it? The one is to please the Lord, the other is for sense gratification.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the difference. In his commentary to 1.2.21, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur lists 14 stages of spiritual advancement indicated in verses 16 to 21. The 14 steps are as follows: mercy of devotees, service to devotees, faith, surrender to guru, desire for worship or hearing, bhakti, clearance of anartas, nishta, ruchi, asakti, rati, prema, seeing the Lord and experiencing the Lord's sweetness. Okay, right? So we see as there's extra here, all the nine are included, but they're giving details of beyond that, which is, you know, gives us a better understanding of what's happening. Right? Because in other words, how do you come to faith? You only come to faith by the mercy of devotees and service to devotees. Then you develop faith. Right? Then you're going to surrender to Guru, so you're going to, you know, continue that service of devotees. But then surrender to Guru, then you desire for hearing, chanting, and then you take up bhakti. Right? So in other words, without the service to the mercy of devotees, service to the devotees, that faith, then, and surrender to Guru, then desire for worship and devotional service don't arise. Right? Then you clear anartas, nishta, ruchi, ashakti, rati, prema. But then then seeing the Lord and experiencing the Lord's sweetness. These are other elements. Verse 16 contains five of these stages. The first two are derived from the same term in the verse. Satam Kripa, the mercy of the devotees. The taste for Krishna Katha arises by service to the great devotees, caused by the good fortune of mercy of those great devotees. In other words, they give the mercy, then you develop by then associating with them, then you get that taste. Does that make sense? So by associating with devotees, you get a taste, but the point is by the mercy of the devotees, you can associate with the devotees. Okay. Two, Mahat Seva, service to the devotees. So you're associating, but now, and getting that mercy, but then you should render service. Shraddha, faith developed as a result of service to the devotees. Guru Parashraya, seeking shelter at the feet of a guru. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur translates the word tirtha, punya tirtha, nishevanat, as guru. The same meaning is given in Srila Prabhupada's purport. Right? Because tirtha means holy place where you can therefore appreciate the Lord in some way, by his pastimes or some of his mercy, something. But that, how do you approach that? That means the real element of tirtha is guru. It's only by guru then, right? Means the concept of this like Navadvip Mandal Parikrama, or Vrindavan Parikrama. Where does it come from in the Gaudiya line? We discussed it the other day. Nityananda Prabhu taking Jiva Goswami around Navadvip, right? As documented by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Though it is mentioned in the, what do you call it? The Bhagavatam. No, before. Narhari Sarkar. Oh, okay. So it's like a history of those times and the associates and everything like that. So it's very famous. So then, how do we get into that?
Tirtha Guru.
Yes. So now, when we go around, we like to go with someone who's explaining. So that means your actual entrance into the Tirtha is the person's explanation of it.
Yes.
Right? Or if we don't have that, we take a book. This would mean someone's explaining it.
Yes.
Right? In other words, the real point of Tirtha is Guru. That's why it says if you come to the Tirtha and don't take advantage of hearing from the devotees, then it's no better than the cow or the ass. The cows are wandering around in the Dham. Right? It's not a problem, right? Generally, people in the Dham are pious, so they have cows. The cows are wandering around, so it's the same thing. Yes.
Was it Narottam Das Thakur who said that going to holy places is simply a disturbance of the mind?
Yeah, so you have to go with people, you know, with devotees. The devotees are what actually makes the tirtha. Just going to the place itself, as he's pointing out, is that nowadays it's so much of a difficulty to move around and get to these places that it's a disturbance,
it's true,
right?
Yeah.
But if you're in good association, then you don't mind, right? Because if you're not, then you'll simply notice the trouble to get there. And then when you get there, then it's like, you know...
But what am I doing here?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. 5. Bhajaneshu spriha, eagerness to hear Krishna katha. Being eager to hear devotional topics, shushusho. He develops taste for those topics. Right? So that's the whole point, is Guru Parashraya means the shelter of the Guru, right? Then you want to hear. Thus, by rendering service to the pure devotees, one attains faith. Shradhananasya, Shradhadhanasya. And with that faith, one takes shelter of the feet of pure guru. Punyatirtha nishevanat. Right? So, we see is that they go one after the other, and then that develops the faith. Right? In other words, mercy of devotees, you service devotees, you develop the faith. Then you want to associate with devotees, you know, and properly serve and all those things. Mm-hmm. So it's two levels of the same thing. So we see here is that there's two aspects. In other words, there's the, what would you call it? The Bhakti Sukriti aspect of Sangha. Mm-hmm. And then there's the actually, you know, within the devotional process. Mm-hmm. Right? But at the same time, as we can say, until it's Bhajana Kriya, that it is basically Bhakti Sukriti. Because you haven't taken up that determined devotional service. So when you surrender to Guru, that's when it starts getting serious. Then you take up that process as defined by Guru. Then you can say, now you're practicing the devotional service. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So this whole thing of that interaction between the devotees, you know, that association, their mercy, that service to the devotees, that increases till it develops the desire to, you know, first faith will come, and then the desire to be involved, to surrender the Guru, and then be involved in the process. So that's how it is.
And Maharaj,
yes.
At the same time, association of devotees is always there, from the beginning, and also...
It's there all throughout. The whole thing is all about association of devotees. Because the process is hearing and chanting. That's in with devotees, you hear and chant, and devotees are always hearing and chanting. Okay. Thereafter, when one very seriously takes to hearing the glories of the Lord, Lord Krishna, as the Paramatma within his heart, cleanses the devotee of all desires for material enjoyment, anarta nivritti. Right. So that's what Krishna is saying in the Gita, that like a bee, you know, collecting, you know, how to say, honey or pollen from all the different places, the Lord takes out all the anarthas from the heart of the devotee for someone who sincerely wants to hear. That's the whole point. You want to hear, that process will work. Why will it work then? Right? You're associating with the Lord. So therefore, you're hearing about the Lord, so then the Lord is there. So the Lord will remove all those things. So if you don't hear, even though the Lord's there, you're not recognizing that, so then, you know, it's you like that anartha, so it's staying. Because of this, the hearing of Krishna Katha is considered in itself to be the highest form of piety. Because piety removes, you know, I mean, you develop good qualities, so you like to give up the bad. But hearing about the Lord, that then all bad qualities go away because the Lord removes them, right? And here he's saying he does it personally, right? You know, we're talking anartha nivritti here. We're not talking, you know, how you say, prema or something. We're talking anartha nivritti. So the Lord is involved right from the beginning. The Lord is pleased because you associate with the devotees. The devotees are more important to Krishna than himself. So that's how the process starts. Because otherwise, why would Krishna give himself You know, unless, you know, unless you're willing to do the same. Right? Krishna gives himself to the devotees, so if you don't give yourself to the devotees, where's the common ground? What is the common relationship between you and Krishna? How will you be have a relationship with Krishna if there's no common ground? That common ground is devotees.
And you would put yourself as superior to Krishna?
No, that's not a matter of necessarily being superior to Krishna, because in Vaikuntha they don't, but it's still prema, it's still Krishna is pleased with that. Yeah. Yes?
If we are aware of like a specific desire, weakness, is it good to zone in our prayers on that, or should we also feel that just like qualities automatically develop, these desires will automatically...
No, it's a matter of... It can be focused on, but not separate from the purpose of developing love for Krishna. Because the point is what's the use of removing the anartha if you don't develop love for Krishna? Because you go to Satyaloka, now everybody there in those four planetary systems, there are four aspects of the Satyaloka planetary system. Does that make sense? I mean, Satyaloka means to that four of the 14 planetary systems. So those four, everybody there, they only have good qualities. Right, they're not interested really in gross sense gratification. That ends with Indra. Mm-hmm. Right, so you know you have to start at level 9 on down. That's sense gratification. The 10, 11, 100, no, excuse me, 14. So 14, 13, 12, and 11. Right, so he's at 10, Indra. Right, so then they're not interested. They only have good qualities. But there's no necessity that they're necessarily devotees. Mm-hmm. Prajapatis aren't necessarily devotees, or the great tapasvis, or the great jnanis, or the great yogis on Brahma's planet. They may be great souls, very pious, but not necessarily devotees. So therefore, praying about getting rid of a bad quality or developing a good quality that's not in context of developing love for Krishna, then you will focus on it.
Well, realizing that your desire is taking you away from hearing and chanting.
That's what I said. As long as it's in connection with the Lord, then it's fine. Okay? Yes?
So now, hearing Krishna Katha is the highest form of piety. But is in any type of piety can come by hearing Krishna Katha?
Any other kind of piety can come, if that's what you want. But also prema can come by hearing Krishna Katha. Yes. So it's whatever you want.
Depend of us.
Yeah, it's just like if there's gold, you know what I'm saying? You can get rupees, you can get lira, you can get euros, you can get pounds, you can get whatever you want. You understand? So you hear and chant, you can get whatever you want, but intelligent persons want prema. Because otherwise, you know, you're going through the same endeavor, why would you want less? Right? You know, it's kind of like you can get 100 pounds or you can get 1 million lira, you know, which do you want?
I think 100 pounds.
You understand? Like that. Yeah. I guess it must be very fulfilling. Like in Italy, everybody works at a six-figure nice salary. Yes.
Yeah, getting a little more detail about my question. I have a weakness for watching movies.
No. But the point is that the detail isn't important. It's a matter of getting rid of the anartha. Is useful in that then you can spend more time or more focus on Krishna consciousness.
So I can zone in on praying to remove that anartha because
it doesn't matter what it is. See, the whole point is understand the principle. Because otherwise, if you don't, you'll just think it's about movies. And then, but what about my desire for something else? And then, is that all right also? Or what about you understand?
Yeah.
It's the principle. Anything that's getting in the way of Krishna consciousness, one should be aware of it and try to control it and remove it. But the only point of removing it is that the benefit that you'll get by now, it'll be easier to do devotional service. You know what I'm saying? Some people talk about being good and being nice as that it stands on its own as important. You know what I'm saying? What is looked at? Okay, someone is a member of this community, like that. Now, what would be the main thing that holds it together that everybody's comfortable you're a member of this community?
Morning program.
Okay. So if you go to the morning program, but you were immoral, would you be a welcome member of the community?
Oh, no. The actual.
Yeah, we're talking reality. You know, reality is distinguished from illusion for the benefit of all. That's what we're talking about. Right? So in other words, if someone is considered or perceived as moral, everybody's comfortable there in the community. Okay? But the problem comes is that what happened to devotional service? Right? So therefore, then you have a community of so-called moralists. Yes. But the problem is who has enough material piety to actually be a moralist? You can count on one hand numbers of real moralists you've met through your whole life.
Yes.
Others only worry about it when something goes wrong. Actual moral people are always worried about morality 24/7. You understand? So therefore, it's impossible. Either it means devotional service will create the morality. And if it's not devotional service, then you already have to have that piety from previous lives. And if you don't have it, you just don't have it. Finished. It's not that you're going to develop it. You can work on developing it, but who knows how long that'll take. Because a level of piety we're looking for, who knows how many lifetimes, hundreds of thousands of lifetimes, to get to that platform. So it's not going to happen immediately. It's not like devotional service that you start off with someone who, you know, is a rough person. And then by practicing devotional service, they turn into a real gentleman. That's the power of devotional service. But if you're going to do it from the mundane platform just as good, who is qualified? Who really is qualified?
Who's qualified for?
Being a moralist. You know what I'm saying? Is it takes material quality. Just like, let's say, to be a fighter pilot. You know, fly, you know, one of these, you know, F whatever they are on now, you know, 18s or 22s or whatever they're up to now. Right? You know, like that. It means it goes by just where you look. You look there, the thing follows your eyes, and then it will do things there. You know, the plane's flying like this. You can fly the plane also like this, and it'll still go forward. Because if you want to shoot your guns, the guy's over there. If you're here, it doesn't work. So you turn the plane like this, you're still going forward. And then you look over there, you're shooting this guy here and looking over there, and you're doing all this at Mach 3. Now, how many people can do that? Right? In a whole country, how many have they had? Yeah, so that's the point. Now, can you just take any Joe off the street and get him to do that? No. So therefore, Pygmalion was wrong, right? Isn't it? Yeah. So the point is they have to have the karma. So you're not going to get someone to be a moralist based on just simply morality, unless they come from a background of moral people. Right? Why would that be there? Because that was their desire. And they, therefore, they were born into that family. So material is based on your material qualifications. You don't have it, you just don't have it. You know, you don't have the ability to sing. It doesn't matter if you go to Juilliard or not. You still can't sing. You understand? You know? It's just like, you know, you take the guy over here. You know, he coughs. You know, his chest caves in. Now, is he going to be Mr. Universe? You know, no, it's just a matter of diet and training, and then we'll make him into, you know, a muscle man. He'll be cleaning and jerking, you know, 500 kilos. No, it's never going to happen. If you don't have already the material potential, you can't do anything with it. Right? Can I take a potato and make it into, let's say, a milkshake? No, it doesn't have the potential. I can make it into French fries. I can't make it into a milkshake. So that's the point, is on the material platform, if you don't have it, you just don't have it. That's it. That's the law. That's the fact. The people, no, but, you know, don't say that, and people will feel bad. Okay, fine. You know, but if facts are so great, no, we just want the truth, then it should be great. Yeah, everybody should know it, but then it's limited. Truth is only there when you feel like it. When you don't feel like it, then don't be so, you know, don't be so rough. The other times, no, you know, why are you being so rough? No, it's just the truth, you know. This is all nonsense, just pure nonsense, because it's just coming from the mundane platform. Does that make sense? So, you have to understand the principle. Nothing is of use unless it's connected to the Lord. And anything not connected to the Lord is not of use. So if you find something like that within one's own heart, then one tries to adjust that. And it doesn't matter what it is. Does that make sense? Otherwise, then movies, but I only watch this kind of movie, you know, like that. That's not so bad. I only watch the old classics, you know, stuff like that. Or someone else says, well, I only watch action. Well, I only watch horror films. You know, I mean, like that, you know. None of this, you know, sentimental stuff. We only watch horror films. You know, saying it's...
But we do have this mentality. We do.
No, but you're, what you have to do is catch the point. The point is, if it's not useful, then get rid of it. It doesn't matter what it is. What I'm pointing out is that if you take that and then you get into the specifics, and everybody gets into their own specifics. And then the whole thing's lost. So, therefore, the generic point is, if it's not useful, get rid of it. You understand? So, you can use the same principle. What do you keep in your house? What's useful, you keep. What's not, you get rid of. What do you keep for clothes? What's useful, you keep. What's not, you get rid of. You can apply it anywhere. That's why we're working with these. They're universal. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, then we'll have to discuss the movie. Someone else will be, you know, about something they eat. Someone else about what they dress. Someone else about how they talk. Someone else about what they drive. Someone else about, you know, it just goes on and on and on. But it's the same principle. Is that okay? Okay. Yeah. Okay. 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 The Lord removes impurities from the heart of those eager to hear His glories. These impurities are called anarthas. In Madhurya Kadambini, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes 6 anarthas causing unsteadiness in bhakti. Right? So basically, these are 6 stages of those 16. You know, I only say 16 because when I say groups of 4, there might be a debate over what group of 4. Yes?
Yes.
So, Utsamayi. Here's the example. A Brahmin child, having just begun study of the scriptures, thinks he has immediately become a learned scholar worthy of everyone's praise. Right? Right, he knows ka-ka, he goes home and he's the big pundit, right? Similarly, a person just beginning devotional service may develop the audacity to think he has mastered everything. He is called Utsamayi, or filled. Puffed up with enthusiasm. Everything puffed up, you know, like the frog.
Yeah.
Like that. So he's filled. Like that. It's interesting how they choose. So you think this, you know, this is something coming from here, but no, it's coming from the Shastra.
Yeah.
Okay. 2, Ganatarala. The same child sometimes becomes diligently engaged in his studies, and yet at other times, because of inability to understand the scriptures and lack of real taste, becomes negligent. In the same way, a new devotee will sometimes practice the different activities of devotional service and sometimes neglect them, being sometimes assiduous and at other times negligent. His endeavor is called gana tarala, condensed, dilute, thick, thin. Right? Sometimes it's really good, and other times it's just waters down. Like that. Yes.
This is 2 years ago, also we went through these. No?
Yes, because it's part of the, he said, Madhurya Kadambini. So this is part of your nectar devotion. Right? But these things, I've told him that they should be there all throughout. It means, in other words, whatever the quotes from anywhere, the references, the sangati, they should be there wherever they come up, wherever they work. You know, just like in Bhagavatam, they quote from Gita. In Gita, you quote from Bhagavatam.
Yeah. That's good.
Right? Because that makes, because otherwise, then, you know, these essential points, then one keeps. Okay, so in other words, you first become very proud, this, and then next you become this, Ganatarala, thick, thin. Then the third, Vyuda Vikalpa. Quote, shall I spend my life happily in family life, making my wife and children Krishna conscious and worshipping the Lord? Or should I give them up, all up, and go to Vrindavan and perfect myself by engaging full time in hearing and chanting with no distractions? It's got to be one extreme or the other, right? Shall I wait until the last stage after enjoying all sorts of pleasures, when I have finally understood that the whole material world is simply a forest fire of affliction? Or should I renounce right now? He will quote many verses supporting each point of view. Right? In other words, the point's been missed. It, or is it this or that? It's just similar. You see, Ganatarala is thin. All of these, you see, there's a pride. Right? Because that's always going to be, the false ego is always going to be underlined. When there's real ego, we're a devotee. So all anartas means there must be an element of false ego. Right? But it's just how it's applied. So here we see, here it's just pride with nothing. Right? But it means, one, you can say, yes, he's gone to school, so now you can say he's a student. But, you know, he's only gone one day, you know, or a couple of days. So he's not like, you know, it's like you got another 20 years to go. Then you say, now I'm a member of the academy. Right? You know, even in the modern concept, until you get to postgraduate level, you're not actually considered a member of the academy. Right? When you have your MA, then you're a member of the academy, but you're actually a serious student of the academy when you're studying your MA. You understand? But you're not really a qualified, unless the MA is the terminal degree, right? Yeah. That until you have a PhD. Mm-hmm. Right? Then you can say, now you're fully a member of the academy. And everybody else is just preliminary. It's all, how you say it? How do you say it? Dhyana Sukriti. Yes, it's pious. He's doing potential. His undergraduate. It's pious. Let him continue. So here, as you see, is that he has that only, right? Then Garatala, then sometimes desire, sometimes not. Now it's about he's more stable than that, but it's not, the Ganatarala is, whether it's, you know, whether I'm absorbed, engage my senses in the Lord's service, or whether I give everything up because it's not, you know, it's not going to work anyway, right?
Yes.
So why would one be asking this? Right?
Because he's not in control.
Yeah, he's not in control. I mean, what's Chanakya's, Chanakya gives a reference in relation to this. It's one of his nitis. No. If you don't know whether to eat or not eat,
don't eat.
If you don't know whether to travel or not travel, don't travel. And if you don't know whether to get married or not get married, get married. Okay? Why? Because the point is if you could actually not be married, you wouldn't even be thinking about it.
Yes.
It wouldn't be an option. You know what I'm saying? Just like the little kid. You know, should he eat the mud in the backyard, or should he, you know, but mommy will get upset, or should he, you know, go into the house and eat something she wants, right? It's a discussion. Why? Because he would eat the mud. Now, will the adult think, well, do I go out in the backyard and eat some of the mud that my kid has, you know, cooked up, or do I, you know, go in the fridge and get something, you know, not so, you know, down home? You know. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the kid eating that mud, could you consider that organic? Maybe the kids are on to something.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? You know, so the point is that he wouldn't be thinking of it unless that is the actual option he should be taking. But we see is that I'll happily in pleasures and that, and then when I realize, then I'll give it all up. But the point is you're supposed to apply the knowledge of detachment into the area of engagement of the senses. Right? Gita's saying the senses are offered into the fire, the sacrifice of the sense objects. So that means that our engagement is in connection with the Lord. Does that make sense? So that's not coming up. That's a proper understanding. You know what I'm saying? So this is, you know, it means, but these are the natural stages you come through. How to engage. So, yeah, these six apply in anything. Right? Then four, Vishya Sangara. Understanding that material enjoyment is forcibly carrying him away and impairing his steadiness in serving Krishna, the devotee resolves to renounce his addictions and take shelter of the holy name. But many times his attempts at renunciation often end in enjoying what he is trying to renounce. Such a person is exemplified in the Bhagavatam. Quote, knowing that sense gratification leads to misery, though he tries to give up his material desires, still he is unable. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:20, 27-28. this ongoing battle with his previously acquired desires for sense gratification, in which he sometimes meets with victory and sometimes with defeat, is called Vishaya Sangara, or struggle with sense pleasure. Also, you may have heard also sometimes war with Maya.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the
tug of war.
Yeah, but the point is now he's trying. So now the other one is, well, you know, do we just engage our senses nicely in Krishna service, or do we give them all up because it's all? Mm-hmm. But now he's come to the point he understands there's no engaging them isn't the real point. Mm-hmm. It's giving up everything for Krishna. Right? So then he's trying to do that, but then it's coming. So we see again this back and forth kind of thing. Right? Does that make sense? It's just a further development. We can see it's the same principle of that you know, thick thin is going on, but taking more and more advanced levels. Right? Then niyamakshama. When the devotee will resolve, from today I will chant such and such number of rounds of japa, and will pay so many obeisances. I will also perform services for the devotees. I will not talk on any subject except the Lord, and I will give up all association with people who talk on material desires. Matters. Though he makes such resolutions every day, he is not always able to execute them. This is called niyamakshama, or inability to follow rules. So now it's not a matter of sin. That's given up. He's not doing things that are unfavorable, but he can't now necessarily be always situated in doing things that are favorable the way he would like. This doesn't mean like going to the program. I mean, he can be, but I'm saying he's going to the program means he's talking, extra, yeah, let's go for this, Get up early, chant La Japa, this and you can come up all kinds of amazing programs. But sometimes you can do them, sometimes not. You think about it. Amazing programs you've come up for with Janmashtami. How many Janmashtamis you're able to have done that at? Right? Because there's been some fabulous, amazing stuff, and others, are sick or tired or this or that. You understand? So this means here. So we see it's still that back and forth, but now it's within actual practice of devotional service. One is trying to practice devotional service, sometimes sin. Sometimes you can't even tell the difference really between the two. And the other is just sometimes you want to do, sometimes you don't want to do at all service. You know what I'm saying? Here it's you're always doing, but you want to do those, special. Okay. Vishaya Sangara is the inability to give up material enjoyment, where niyamakshama is the inability to improve his devotional service, right? One is he can't get rid of the negative, the other is he's not able to make the positive dynamic, right? Then, 6, taranga rangini. Finally, it is well known that the very nature of bhakti is to be attractive. So all types of people become attracted to the devotee, the abode of bhakti. And, as the old adage goes, by the attraction of populace, one becomes wealthy. Bhakti produces much opportunity for material gain, worship, and position, labha, puja, and pratishtha. These are weeds around the creeper of bhakti. Performing activities or seeing one's pleasure, ranga, amidst these weed-like facilities, which are but small waves, taranga, in the ocean of bhakti, is called taranga rangini, delighting in material facilities. In other words, he is successful. He is able to perform. And because of that, it attracts attention. Because of that, there's facilities. Because of that, he gets distracted by these facilities. But he's still performing a service, but he's distracted by these facilities. But if one's not careful, any one of, it can take one. How you say it? So, I always bring out the point that it's important to note there's a difference and which level you fall from. Right? Because people go, oh, he was so advanced, so how did he get distracted by this? But if he was so advanced, then it's taranga rangini. Yeah. So if you're not on that platform, don't criticize.
Yeah.
Right? The point is if you allow distraction, it doesn't matter how good you are, it'll have a problem. Does that make sense? Now, if you're in a trench and people are firing at you, now a private sticks his head up above the trench and he gets his head blown off. Okay? Now, what would happen if a general stuck his head up above? He wouldn't get his head blown off because he's more senior and more advanced, right? The bullet would go around or bounce off, or it would just stop there in midair and spin until he moves his head. Then it would go by. Right? Isn't it? So the point is, it doesn't matter who you are. The same things, the material distraction, will be a problem. So therefore, don't criticize senior devotees when they fall, because they're falling from an actual advanced platform. Not, oh, they did that, they were never advanced. That is the statement of Utsamayi.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Unless you're using, oh, they were never advanced, means they were never on prema. If you're taking that perspective, that's okay. But most people don't understand that point. Because right? I know one senior devotee, he made that point. But his point was, they're not on prema. Mm. Right? Because if they were in prema, you wouldn't fall. Yeah. Baba, you can still fall. That's uttamadhikara. Mm-hmm. Right? So the point is that, you know, so he was saying prema. But others take it as, oh, he wasn't advanced at all. He was no different than the new bhakta. Mm-hmm. And even probably less, because the new bhakta is still practicing. Mm-hmm. You understand? So you have to be very, very careful with this. Yes.
Should we consider this last stage of bhajana kriya as advanced stage of devotional service?
You can say is that this fifth stage, that's nishta. You know? Even you could say the fourth is lower stage of nishta. Mm. It's touching on. You could say the middle is like in the middle. And then this higher would be the highest. So you could say 4, 5, and 6 would be the lowest, middle, and upper levels of nishta, at least.
Okay.
There might be advanced in some other areas where there's taste and this and that, but we're just talking generic.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Right? But the point is that aruchi means then all these material tastes go away.
Mm.
Does that make sense? Mm. Yeah.
So...
Association is still all the same, because all this is all in the context of by associating with devotees, one develops that desire to hear and chant. And so by hearing and chanting in the association of devotees, that's what makes the whole process work. And so that's based on, and that, you know, develops, it's based on, but it also produces the desire to hear. Right? That shushu means when you have the desire to hear, then you take advantage of that association of devotees. But it's by the mercy and association of devotees that you have the desire to hear. So it's all about that. Does that make sense? So within that, then you come from taking up bhajana kriya that is anishta, which means it's with anarthas. Then it becomes nishta. Right? In other words, there's bhajana, anishta bhajana kriya. Then anartha nivrita, then there's nishta bhajana kriya. But they say, you know, since it's going in stages, then bhajana kriya, you start there, then you remove the anarthas within bhajana kriya, then you become stable in bhajana kriya, then you get a taste within bhajana kriya, then you get attachment like this. So each one remains, just like Shraddha remains throughout, and Sarasanga remains throughout. So it's not that when you move to the next, now I've taken up devotional process, bhajana kriya, I don't need to associate it with devotees. Faith, hey, we gave that up before we started associating with devotees, because, you know, that was, you know, that's it. Everybody's got that, you know. Does that make sense? Yes.
My understanding, association means seeing, hearing, touching, and taking remnants of food?
Yes, also dust from the lotus feet or water from the lotus feet or... Oh, they mean anything that's favorable association with the Vaishnavas. Not secondhand car salesman, crocodile grin association. Okay. Yeah, throw in a gold star or something. Yeah. Okay. So, in other words, these six have to be watched out for. This is what anartha nivriti means, right? And what are the anarthas you're getting rid of? That was the previous gunas, right? Weakness of heart, offenses, asatrishna means material attachment, and illusion, right? Not understanding the philosophy. So that's why Prabhupada said, if you don't read his books, study his books, then one, there's every chance one can fall down. You know, in fact, Prabhupada said they will. Because the point is, otherwise, if you don't get rid of the illusion, why will you take the devotional process or devotees seriously?
That's what illusion means.
That's what illusion means. You don't have proper understanding of God or the soul or devotional service as the goal. So because of that, then your practice will be weak. So it doesn't matter where you start. You're going to start with some illusion, but as you remove the illusion, you improve the quality. So because, you know, bhakti gets develops bhakti, you just get more bhakti. Yeah. Still have a couple more. In his purport to 1.2.17, Srila Prabhupada explains how the anarthas are removed from the heart. The Lord is reciprocally respondent to his devotees. When he sees that a devotee is completely sincere in getting admittance to the transcendental service of the Lord and has thus become eager to hear about him, the Lord acts from within the devotee in such a way that the devotee may easily go back to him. The Lord is more anxious to take us back into his kingdom than we can desire. Right? In other words, he wants us back more than we want to be back. Right? So that's why there's a whole process there to get us back, because it's not like we worked it out or somebody thought, hey, this would be a great idea, and then worked out a whole plan. No, Krishna's worked all this out. Right? He's the Adi Guru. He gives the scriptures. He comes as the devotee. Right? The Lord is more anxious to take us back into his kingdom than we can desire. So, but the point is, if you only want to be in the kingdom and not be with him, so that's why the focus on going back to Godhead is about being, you know, serving the devotees. But the point is, you can do that anywhere. So that's what you want, not, oh, I only want to serve the devotees there, not here. Right? Yeah. Most of us do not desire at all to go back to Godhead. I'm cool. Only a very few men want to go back to Godhead. But anyone who desires to go back to Godhead, Sri Krishna helps in all respects. So in other words, there is the element of going back to Godhead, but that means serving the personality of Godhead in favorable devotion as directed by his eternal associates. One cannot enter into the kingdom of God unless one is perfectly cleared of all sins. Bhagavatam mentions sins means material. Right, so that means also piety. That's why we make the point about, because in the modern age, piety is counted as morality, right? Means previously you talk about religion, you know, varnashram and things like that. But we're talking about those committed to, you know, varnashram has no importance. So all they have left, if you want to hold together society, is morality, ethics. You know, that's it, like that. So here we're talking about is anything that's material, even the desire for liberation, is actually a sin that will keep you out of the material spiritual world. Right? The material sins are products of our desires to lord it over material nature. So whether it is in a pious way or an impious way, or even being freed from the material nature, you lord it over material nature. And you're, in other words, you're happy by not being controlled by material nature. Mm-hmm. You know, like the kid is happy, you know, ran out the back door when his mom wasn't looking, hopped on his bike and is riding down the block. He's happy. He's free. He's out of the control of the, you know, the big witch Maya, you know, and the whole thing like that. I'm liberated like that. How long does that last? You know, maybe, you know, you get a few hundred feet and then his mom will come down and pick him up. And
that was that.
Yeah. It didn't work so good.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, okay. It is very difficult to get rid of such desires. Women and wealth are very difficult problems for the devotee making process on the path back to Godhead. Right? Because wealth means facility. Women means the opportunity to enjoy. Does that make sense? That is the Purusha Bhav. So you can read it as specifically women meaning those who are in bodies of women, and wealth meaning something that is some kind of flat paper with faces on it that you can relate to, right? But it also means wealth is facility, situations, right? And women means what is enjoyable within those situations. In other words, how you could interact. So in other words, when it says dunam dunam sundarim, it means everybody, not that this is, you know, you know how you say a masculine, you know, dominated movement, therefore we say. Yes. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, women and wealth are very difficult problems for the devotee making process on the path back to Godhead. Many stalwarts in the devotional line fell victim to these allurements and thus retreated from the path of liberation. Right? But when one is helped by the Lord himself, the whole process becomes as easy as anything by the divine grace of the Lord, right? So even the great, stalwarts if they're not devotees, it's very difficult. The example is always given of Vishwamitra. Here is a person, right, who went from being just a, that I know of, just a king. That's where he started. I mean, that's where I know the story from. How far back it goes, where he started, I don't know. It was a king. Then he became a bigger king. Then he figured out that unless you're an emperor, it doesn't matter. Right? Because whatever you are, there's someone bigger. He's always defeated or insulted or they have better facility. Then when he came in that whole pastime with
Vasishta,
then he understood, you know, forget this king's emperor stuff. Brahmins, now that's where it's at. Right? And then Vasishta is the son of Brahma. So it's not, you don't want to just become a Brahmin. You know, you have to become a Brahmarshi. You know, it means a, you know, one who's accepted as a Brahmana who is a son of Brahma. So then he started doing penances and the studies to get that. Then he was accepted like that. Not that he's born there, but he's just given that title. Right? So he Brahma acknowledges that, yes, you are now a Brahma Rishi. Right? So then you have all that, but he has problems. He gets distracted. Does that make sense? That's the whole point. Menaka comes along, you know, and, you know, how you say, he retreats from the path of liberation. Right? Like that. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Okay, so we'll end here.
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Samavita Bhaktivinoda ki. Jai Nitai Gaura Prabhupada.